That's about it. I don't know, if some guy running around stabbing people seems pretty random. Probably a terrorist attack.
I saw a woman lying on the floor in Chanel, so...
What do you think it's like?
I didn't see him properly, I was running. But it's just, it was insane. It was insanity, I wasn't expecting it.
What was going through your mind when you were trying to get out?
I thought I was going to die. Like, I was just, I came out of the gym, I was just like, living my life, and then I thought I was going to die. I just, like, everything, all, every moment just playing through my head. Like, I was so scared.
Things where the screaming was happening, we thought, like, that's a bit odd. Everyone was like, oh, like, what is that? Even when, before we heard the gunshots, when we heard someone say someone got stabbed, we didn't believe it. We thought that must be made up.
I saw people running, like, quite clearly in one direction, and behind them was a man with a knife running towards different people. He was running up to them or... trying to, I don't know what he was doing.
They just said, run, someone's being stabbed. And so we were inside Dior, they closed the doors, and we saw the guy come up the escalators, green shirt, I think shorts, with a big black knife in his hand. And just really calmly, he was just walking like he was having an ice cream in the park, you know. And then he went up the escalators at Zara, and then probably within about a minute, we heard 3 gunshots, and that was it.
This just so abrupt changes the pattern of what you feel. Of course, we all feel it.
No more so than those who saw the worst of it.
I, honestly, I'm still trying to figure it out.
Our hearts are absolutely broken for the people that went shopping and didn't come home.
Just tragic, like it's not real. Like, you see that kind of stuff, and it's just not real.
It's going to be 100 fully exposed that this is a hoax. Watch the lady officer supposedly took them down. All these people, bystanders, are all still there chilling, right? And I'm a roll tape right here, and watch, you see the blood pack, right? They messed up and they put the blood pack right here, folks, like the line of it. Remember in the video footage I broke down, he was face down on that trail because they had to readjust him. But here you can see that he is not on that line. He's not bleeding from this line at all. If you're gonna tell me he's bleeding from his hand and it's dripping like all the way back like that, you are ridiculous. But anyways, watch her adjust him to make sure that he's actually on that bloodline that they put on the ground. Look. Are they gonna come back in again? Everybody's chilling. Nothing's going on. They're not afraid. Here she goes. She comes down to him, right? See, this guy is doing the blood. Yep. She pulls him. This guy right here, this other officer or whatnot? I don't know. I don't know if he's the one that did the blood pack. But yeah, man, this is so staged. Stage. Look at this. They moved this body I don't know how many times. So look, he's next to that wall, that column right there. And then she pulls him. Look at this. She pulls him over. They're like, no. The blood pack doesn't match. It doesn't line up correctly. Yep. That is so crazy, folks. Watch, this person looks suspicious. suspicious as heck. I'm pretty sure he's the one that did the dripping of the blood with a water bottle or something. Watch, you're gonna show him come up pretty soon. Sorry, you guys. I got it on super slow-mo here. Right here. This guy looks so suspicious, the one that's kind of walking funny. You see this guy right here? And he looks. Yep, my job is done. Gotta get out of here. You messed up, man. That's where they dragged the body out. 100% stage as heck, man. Look at this.
We're going to go ahead and break down this hoax show over in Sydney, Australia, right, at the mall stabbing. And I really don't need to break it down because there's really nothing to break down. It's a 100% fraud. There's nobody being stabbed. There's absolutely nothing.
It's a new vision that we're just seeing now. This is, we're told, the man with the knife running. You can see people running away from
him. This dude is like lightly jogging to go stab people. Just like the other knife attack. Remember that dude that was running around the kids' playground and the cop was like going down the slide and people were this is 100% baloney. But you know, in Australia, they have knife attacks because they need knife control, folks. Over here in America, we got, you know, guns, mass shooting, you know what I mean? So gun mass shooting for America, for gun control. Australia, knife control. Same thing in London, knife attacks.
Kim, I'm seeing this as you all are at the moment as well. Our producers have just had a quick look at it now in his right arm.
This dude, you see him stab anybody, you know what I mean? This guy is probably in on the show, the guy with the hat right here with the backpack. I think he did an interview. Oh, man, I think I saw him on an interview that he just did like moments ago, but I'm going to see if I can find that.
You can see the knife that's been referred to.
See, and he doesn't stab nobody. Nobody's getting killed.
That person scrambling away from him on the right of screen there. Other people still not sure what's going on. Den working out what's going on. Just, clearly, we don't have audio.
Just flinches at other people and things, but yeah, bunch of baloney.
But he would appear to be shouting at people, that man in the cap there, trying to talk.
Super weak hoax, man. Australia, they make the weakest hoax ever, man. They, you know, it's like just baloney as heck. Like low budget, like really childish hoaxes. It's just so weak. Maybe because the people in Aussie is just like, they like to buy it up, like America people too. You know, the sheep loves buying these hoax shows though. But, you know, I guess people fall for it everywhere, all around the world. Of course, at every event, they got to have the hero, you know what I mean? The cop that shoots the guy. And, you know, some of the civilians that are in on the show, they got to be the hero too. Like this guy on the escalator is about to smash, you know, the guy's head in, you know what I mean? The knife attacker. Like it's a bunch of baloney, man. But I worked in a Westfield mall for many, many years, man. You know, it's so easy to set the stage of the hoax events, man, at their own, you know, compound. You know what I mean? Just like how they do hoaxes on military station, you know, bases and things. You know, it's just so easy to do because it's super controlled, man. At the mall, it's actually even easier. You guys think it's hard, man? I worked in the mall for many, many years, and you know, we had fire drills. We had, like, people shooting in there. We had people fighting in there. And man, I know how it is, man, when real legit stuff goes down, you know what I mean? And also, like, when the hoax shows goes down, man.
full list of Cauchy's victims confirmed. Six completely different people from all parts of the world happening to come together at exactly the wrong place at exactly the wrong time. You've got Dawn Singleton, the beautiful bride-to-be, who is the daughter of one of Australia's best-known businessmen, that's advertising gazillionaire John Singleton, and who was about to marry Ashley Wildy, a New South Wales police officer who was called to the shopping centre as reports emerged that there was a man with a knife hurting people. Then we have Ashley Good, young mum who died trying to save her baby, nine-month-old Harriet stabbed while she was in her pram. Now, in 25 years of journalism, I've written and spoken some terrible words about terrible events, but nine-month-old baby stabbed in her pram, that takes some beating for sheer depravity. Her mum rushes her bleeding child away from Cauchy and begs two brothers to keep her safe before Ashley collapses and later dies in hospital. Those two plot lines alone would test the credibility of any Netflix series, and it unfolded at a Westfield shopping centre.
Jade Young was an architect.
A much-loved member of the Bronte Surf Club. Then we have a host of victims who speak to Australia's very rich social tapestry. Yixuan Cheng was a Chinese woman studying in Australia. Pikria Dacia, an artist from Georgia. And Pakistani refugee Faraz Tahir, only been in Australia a year, takes a job as a security guard and fronts up for his first day at the Bondi Junction shops a few hours before Cauchy walks in.
Completely unhinged.
Notice we have medicalised acts of wickedness now. We don't call the perpetrator evil. We call them disturbed or troubled. Cauchy wasn't on the Queensland Police's fixated threat database, which tracks people who become obsessed with public figures. But the more we look into his past, the more clues we find that this guy had a lot of hallmarks of someone who was on the path to violence.
Obsessed with knives.
Complained to police that his parents had taken his collection of blades off him. Had delusions about his own station in life. He advertised himself as a male escort. And clearly lonely. Put out messages on social media for people to come surfing with him. And to take photos of the night sky.
And to go shooting with.
You don't need to be an FBI graduate to realise that's a red flag. And this is where Australia had its there but for the grace of God moment. Joel Cauchy, a lonely schizophrenic, was scoping firearms. Anyone who reckoned that Australia's gun laws are too restrictive should remember that if Joel Cauchy had the option of walking into his local Walmart and buying an assault rifle, he would have. And the body count would have been a lot higher.
The baby got stabbed and yeah. The mum got stabbed and the mum came over with the baby and threw it at me and just holding the baby, yeah, it looked pretty bad, but yeah.
And how were you able to help out?
I just helped.
Just holding the baby and trying to compress the baby and same with the mother, trying to compress the blood from stopping and calling ambulance and police.
That would have been pretty horrific to see. What were those injuries actually like?
Oh, very bad. There's a lot of blood on the floor and... Hope the baby's all right.
Say hello to the shrinking in your head. You can't see it, but you know it's there. So don't neglect it.
A fascination with knives, a frustration with women, and a long history of severe mental illness. Today, more shocking details have emerged about the murderer behind Bondi's mass stabbing, which left six dead and a nation reeling.
This is so horrendous that I can't even explain it.
Under the weight of a nation's grief, the parents of 40-year-old Bondi knifeman Joel Cauchy
appeared outside their Toowoomba home.
I'm so sorry about what our son has done. If he was in his right mind, he would be absolutely devastated.
They'd been worried about their son since high school, when he was diagnosed with schizophrenia at 17. Since then, he'd been taking medication. But in recent years, after doctors thought he was doing better, he stopped. They never expected it would end like this. The family recognising Joel as the horror unfolded, contacting police.
This is a parent's absolute nightmare when they have a child with mental illness.
Tributes pouring in today for the six victims killed in his mass stabbing spree at Bondi Junction.
We're, you know, shocked and traumatised and heartbroken.
It's a place of love, of fun, of peace. And it was shattered by this just incomprehensible act of cruelty and violence.
As questions emerge about how such an unwell man was able to slip through the cracks.
We spend billions on mental health every year, but if it's going to the right places, if it's spent in the right way, if the quantum is enough, will be the focus of our inquiry.
The uni is a monster. To me, he was a very sick boy. He was a very sick boy.
And then, of course, there's the mental well-being of everyone watching on as this story unfolds. Georgie Harmon is the CEO of Beyond Blue and is with us now. Georgie, this is an unthinkable tragedy. How as a nation do we even begin to process a terrible event like this?
Look, I think the thing to first say is that if you're having all these feelings, and they're big feelings for many people, it's actually really normal and natural to feel them. So don't beat yourself up about it. You know, be a friend to yourself and be a friend to those around you. The biggest and I think the most powerful thing we can do right now is to turn to each other and find those social connections.
Is there some message in that about protecting younger children from hearing too much and seeing too much of this?
Yeah, look, absolutely. And it's sometimes, Steve, it's really difficult to protect our kids from this stuff when it's everywhere. The 24/7 news cycle, you know, social media, they will find a way or inadvertently see stuff that we don't want them to see. And we can't bubble wrap them, you know, but what we can do is be prepared to help them to learn how to respond to great tragedies like this. And they'll look to us and they'll watch us and they'll see how we're actually processing our own emotions. So be ready for those questions. Don't disencourage them. As a family, sit down and actually talk about it and use really plain, simple, honest language. It's actually okay to say to kids, look, we don't know why this happened. We may never know why this happened. I don't have the answers, but you are safe. Mum and dad are safe, or your parents, your family's safe. And these are very rare events. And focus on the helpers. Focus on these incredible acts of courage and bravery that bring us together and make us our best selves as people.
Snake.
My name is Geraldine Doogue, and I'll be your master of ceremonies for this community. Tonight, none of us are delighted to be here, but we're happy to be here, if you see the distinction. We're here to grieve, to bond, just to be together, really, following the Bondi Junction tragedy that I think is still so raw and so emotional for many of us. We're gathered in the shadow of the tragic events at Bondi Junction last Saturday, and thank you all very much for being here as we stand really in solidarity and to show support for those directly affected by the tragedy, many of whom are here tonight. We gather not just as individuals but as a community, united, expressing grief, compassion and resilience. In the face of this tragedy, it's important, I think, that we gather not only to mourn, but to find strength as well in one another. That is really the unexpected prize, I suppose. So your presence is a testament to the bonds that do link us, bonds of empathy, love, and shared humanity. I invite us all to remember those who have been affected by this heartbreaking event. Let's honour the memory of those we lost, reaffirming our commitment to each other as a community. Let us reflect on the bravery and the compassion of all of those who acted in such unexpected pressure upon them and who then acted, possibly to their own astonishment, quite heroically. We hope this vigil stands as a beacon of hope amidst the darkness and so much being incomprehensible, a reminder that even in our grief, we're really not alone. Together, we can find solace and healing and the courage to face the challenges ahead. We now invite the dignitaries who represent the local community, the state, and the whole nation to take to the stage and to light their candles. The lighting will be accompanied on didgeridoo by Wallangurry. Leading the lighting is the Governor of New South Wales, Margaret Beasley. The Prime Minister of Australia, Anthony Albanese. The Mayor of Waverley Council, Paula Marcellos. The Leader of the State Opposition, Mark Speakman. And the Premier, Chris Minns. I welcome State Ministers Penny Sharp and Yasmin Catley. Welcome the Leader of the Federal Opposition, Peter Dutton. Federal and State Members of Parliament will now light their candles. Finally, mayors of our local government areas.
Tonight, we gather in the shadow of tragedy, our hearts heavy with grief and our souls burdened by sorrow. We come together not only to mourn, but to find solace in each other's presence, to seek comfort in our shared humanity, the strength and resilience of our community, and to reaffirm our commitment to healing and hope. I welcome Prime Minister Anthony Albanese, Premier Chris Minns, invited guests of, and all of the community who are with us here tonight to commence this healing. On behalf of my fellow councillors and I offer my deepest condolences to the families of the innocent people who lost their lives, to the first responders and everyday heroes who rushed towards the danger without hesitation, risking their own lives to save others. We owe you a debt of gratitude that can never be repaid. Your courage, your selflessness, and your unwavering commitment is a testament to the best of humanity. Waverley is a special place. We are a strong, diverse, and resilient community. What happened here last weekend is just unfathomable. We all know people who were at Westfield at the time and have heard harrowing stories. We are all in mourning. It will take the families, friends, and the community much time to come to terms with the events that unfolded. But let me say this. Our spirit must not and will not be diminished. Our country is a safe place to live. Waverley is a safe place. It's been touching to see people who don't know one another coming together in the mall, standing side by side and supporting each other. Please continue to hold your loved ones tight and raise each other up through understanding and acts of kindness. This is how we will respond to violence. This is how we will remain united, recover and rebuild together. As we stand here tonight, surrounded by candlelight and embraced by the warmth of our community, let us remember that even in the darkest of times, there shines a glimmer of light, a light born from the resilience of the human spirit, from the compassion that binds us together, and from the unwavering resolve to stand united in the face of adversity. Tonight, we pay our respects to the victims of this tragic event. You will never be forgotten, and Waverley Council will forever stand side by side with the families, those injured, and every single person in this community.
While I'm up here, I must say that we ask our emergency workers, many of whom are young, to walk into terrible situations as an ordinary part of their job. And notwithstanding the dangers of last week, if there was an emergency tomorrow, we'd ask them to do it all over again. The truth is we don't have a choice. We need them. The least we can do is say thank you and acknowledge absolutely that our police and our paramedics did their duty when they were called upon. They saved lives and we owe them a huge debt of gratitude. Bondi is known around the world for its glamour. And with a view this beautiful, it's easy for many people to think that you'd go soft. But Bondi is tough and this is a strong community. And we will get through this, because it's full of people who put their own lives in danger to rescue someone else. Because we'll grieve for people in our community we've never met just because they're members of our community.
We gather here to remember them, our candles held against the darkness. And we offer the condolences of this community and to all who are with us in spirit. Please know this, that every Australian is thinking of you. We are with you as a community, as a country, today, tomorrow, and always.
take you live to the CEO of the Centre Group on the plans for Westfield Bondi.
About the reopening of Westfield Bondi. We have been very considered in our plans to reopen the centre in a way that is respectful to the victims, their families and all in the community who are grieving. Tomorrow, Thursday the 18th of April, the centre will open as a community reflection day. There will be no retail trade tomorrow. Instead, the centre will be open for members of the community to visit the centre, to walk through the centre and to pay their respects. There will be counselling services available on site in order to provide resources to all who need. This has been a very difficult time, and I want to acknowledge the hard work and efforts, tireless efforts, of our Westfield Bondi team and the broader Centre Group team in working, as I said, tirelessly in our reopening plans and working through conditions which have been very devastating in their minds and in all of our minds. There will be increased security presence. There will be an increase in the equipment that the security guards have to wear. But more importantly, there'll be increased police presence, which will augment the security and the safety settings that are at Westfield Bondi and throughout the Westfield portfolio.
With plenty of concern across Sydney after the recent spate of stabbings, the Premier is now considering new laws allowing police to randomly search people for knives on the streets. The push for change is being led by frontline workers, including bus drivers and nurses.
Multiple unions, police...
This is about keeping the community safe.
Public servants...
In our view, that would save lives.
Transport...
We also support this law.
And health, seizing on the tragedy of Bondi Junction to follow Queensland's lead.
So both of you have been selected for random knife wanding.
Allowing police to use metal detector wands for random searches.
This is an opportunity now for the government to look at Jack's law.
Our members are at the forefront. We want protection.
Hospitals.
Small example of the number of weapons that have been taken off patients. You can also see some of the wounds that our security officers have sustained.
We are contemplating a law change, and I think that's a reasonable thing to do when you see shocking, violent crime that has many in the community concerned.
The Premier is cautious that searches without a warrant or even reasonable suspicion could target people unfairly based on profiling. Advocates, however, say Jack's law is not invasive and not a problem if you're not carrying.
Carry a knife and say that it's for their own protection. It won't cut it.
we should consider better protection for security guards, including pepper spray and tasers, because, as I wrote, the defence of shoppers in Bondi was left to a brave Frenchman brandishing a bollard on an escalator and a father who stood in front of his family as Cauchy approached. Now, if you give proper training to security guards, and we expect them to protect us, etc., why should they not be able to carry a taser that they can deploy in the most extreme of circumstances? It comes with all the same rules as coppers with guns. If it is deployed, there needs to be a full investigation. If you're misused, you should never be able to work as a security guard again. But I cannot help thinking that in that situation at Bondi last weekend, something like a taser would have been able to neutralise and disarm a knife-wielding assailant. Because by the time you've called the cops and the cops arrive, the damage has been done.
Exactly right. I think we definitely need to look at that. And, I mean, if you're a security guard, if you were a security guard at Bondi Junction in Westfield last week, I mean, what was your line of defence?
Well, you were helpless.
That's exactly right. Literally nothing. And then you ask, well, why do we even have security guards if they aren't authorised to actually secure us against threats? So that's exactly the right question to be asking. I think the only positive thing that has come out of this horrific tragedy is that we've now, as a country, all recognise the amazing work that our police do. And it's actually so encouraging to see people from across the political divide praising our policemen for doing their job and actually policing and defending us.
Prime Minister Anthony Albanese's campaign for greater online censorship has made him into a massive international joke on social media after he complained about those mocking him with memes and fake footage.
Media platforms have a responsibility to make sure that misinformation isn't got out there. I noticed today, for example, on the way up here, they've removed various sites that were up containing fake images of myself superimposed on other people. That's the sort of thing that is going on social media. Social media has a responsibility to do the right thing here.
How shocking. Can you believe that's going on social media? People making fun of the Prime Minister. Really, I mean, this is one of the viral clips that he's inspired as he's trying to use the powers of the state to control free speech online. Do we really need that removed from the internet? Does the PM think he is above mockery?
Here's Julie Inman Grant telling you what you can and can't listen to or hear.
So if they fail to remove the content, then we can go to the search engines such as Google or Bing to really minimize the amount of content the Australians can see.
Minimise, James, the account of the amount of content Australians can see. You heard it there from the lips of our chief censor.
This is really, really sinister because what's happening now, Rowan and Rita, is that this global wave of censorship, we've seen this happening in Ireland, we've seen this happening in Canada, we've seen this happening in other European countries, is crashing here on the shores of Australia. And it is all about a global movement by governments that have lost control of the narrative because of social media. They no longer get to tell you what to think. There's no longer the monopoly of approved media providers and so on. So therefore, they need to stop this. And, you know, we saw this start during the pandemic and how much they absolutely hated alternative viewpoints on all sorts of elements of the pandemic, how it was managed, lockdowns, vaccines, everything else. A lot of things that were called misinformation, by the way, turned out to be absolutely correct.
100%.
Now we are seeing this here. And you know what? The thing is, this whole move by people like Julie Inman Grant and this government, but also backed in by the coalition, many in the coalition, I have to say, it really has its roots in totalitarian China. This is this whole idea that we need to preserve social harmony. That's the sort of thing that Chinese leaders say when they say, we're not going to talk about this topic or allow you to post about that topic because it could upset people. Well, you know what? This is a free country. This is a democracy. I think the coalition here needs to rediscover its first principles on free speech. and say no to this.
Well, it's not a free country. And Rita, carry on. But it is not a free country. It is being censored right in front of your eyes. We just saw that earlier on Sky. All the politicians, Rita, are behind this thing.
It is absolutely disgusting to see this happening in a free country. There's a similar crackdown happening on X, formerly Twitter, in Brazil.
Yep. Yes.
And Australia is now in that camp. Are we some sort of banana republic here where the people can't be trusted? And as James mentioned with COVID, if the COVID era taught us nothing else, it's that it's important to get free information. We had Harvard, Oxford, Stanford professors silenced and censored during COVID. These, and they've been all vindicated because they were challenging some of these draconian measures and saying they're not based in science, they're not going to actually help, they can actually do a great deal of harm and be counterproductive. And perhaps if those voices were heard more widely, we wouldn't have such a catastrophic response as we did.
And during the pandemic, we had, for example, Jacinda Ardern in New Zealand saying that the government was the source of truth. She said it repeatedly, the sole source of truth. Turned out to be wrong, by the way, that sole source of truth, but they insisted on it. Now we have Karen Webb, the police commissioner in this country, saying exactly the same thing. Have a listen here.
There is misinformation being communicated across social media, and people should not share any of that information. The source of information should be from police and law enforcement authorities, and if people have concerns, they should check our websites, our socials.
This is, let me just say, this is an absolute disgrace. This is a free country. The police commissioner is not the sole source of truth. This is disgraceful how a tragedy is being used by our parliamentarians on both sides. Liberal, we've just had Simon Birmingham basically agreeing to this misinformation push. We had Murray Watt on earlier. They're all doing it. We've had Chris Minns going, oh, yes, yes, misinformation. That's what it's all about. Blame social media. They are attacking your freedoms. This is totalitarianism coming out of your computer app. You have a listen to Chris Minns, for example.
This is exactly as I'd expect from X or Twitter or whatever you want to call it, a disregard for the information that they pump into our communities, lies and rumours spreading like wildfire. It's about time that we strengthen rules in relation to the E-Safety Commissioner or the federal government. All penalties that are in place for social media companies, we would all be in favour of that.
No, no, no. That is authoritarianism. That is totalitarianism. Our politicians are out of control.
For the first time tonight, we can bring you a first-hand account from a victim of the Bondi Junction attack. Security guard Muhammad Taha was stabbed in the stomach and was there as his colleague died. He invited Nine News to his bedside today to share his remarkable story.
Holding his stomach where he was stabbed, security guard Muhammad Taha is racked by physical and emotional pain after his run-in with a killer.
I tried to, use my hands and, just somehow he managed to stab me in the stomach.
And then there was a shock of learning his colleague, Faraz Tahir, was dead.
After that, 2-3 days, they told me that Faraz is no more.
Muhammad Taha is slowly recovering. his spirits lifted by an offer of citizenship.
I'm also very thankful to the minister and the prime minister who given me the permanent residency for the country I love.
His mate who saved him is now also hoping for the same recognition.
Today, one of Saturday's heroes has been recognised. French construction worker Damien Guéraud grabbed what he could to stop the attacker in his tracks, earning him the title Bollard Man.
Someone who's not a citizen of this country stood bravely at the top of those escalators and stopped this perpetrator.
For that, the Prime Minister says he deserves to be an Australian citizen.
I say this to Damien Guéraud, who is dealing with his visa applications, that you are welcome here, you are welcome to stay for as long as you like.
Mr Guéraud's lawyer says he's been offered permanent residency.
He embodies the Anzac spirit, and we would want people of that character in our country.